Chapter 13. That Sunday, Hassan went cruising with Lindsay and Katrina and TOC and JATT and SOCT. The next night he went cruising again, and came home after midnight to find Colin working on his theorem, which now worked 17 of 19 times. He still couldn't get it to work for Catherine 3, or more importantly, Catherine 19. "Sup?" asked Hassan. "Sup is not a word," answered Colin without looking up. "You're like sunshine on a cloudy day, Singleton. When it's cold outside, you're the month of May."
"I'm working," Colin said.
He couldn't quite pinpoint when Hassan had started to become like everyone else on the planet, but it was clearly happening, and it was clearly annoying.
"I kissed Katrina," Hassan said.
And then Colin put his pencil down and turned around in his chair and said, "You wotted who?"
"Wotted isn't a word," mimicked Hassan.
"On the lips?"
"No, dumbass, on her pupillary sphincter."
"Yes, on the lips."
"Why?"
"We were sitting in the back of Colin's truck, and we were spinning this beer bottle, but it was bumpy as all hell, because we were riding up to this place in the woods. And so someone would spin the beer bottle, and it'd fly the way hell up and land on the other side of the truck bed, so no one was kissing anyone. So I figured it was safe to play, right? But then I spin the bottle, and I swear to God, it spun in the tightest little circle. Even though we were still going over these bumps, I mean, only God could have kept that bottle from jumping up in the air. And then it stopped right in front of Katrina, and she said, 'Lucky me.' And she wasn't even being sarcastic, Kafir. She was serious, and she leaned across the truck, and we hit a bump and just sort of landed in my arms. And then she made a beeline for my mouth, and I swear to God, her tongue was just, like, licking my teeth." Colin just stared, incredulous. He wondered whether Hassan was making it up. "It was, weird and wet and messy, but fun, I guess. The best part was having my hand in her face and looking down at her and seeing her eyes closed. I guess she's a chubby chaser or something. Anyway, I'm taking her to Taco Hell tomorrow night. She's picking me up. That's how I roll, baby," Hassan smirked. "The ladies come to Big Daddy, 'cause Big Daddy ain't got no car."
"You're serious?" said Colin.
"I'm serious."
"Wait, you think the bottle staying still in the truck was a miracle?"
Hassan nodded. Colin tapped his pencil eraser against the desk and then stood up.
"And God wouldn't lead you to kiss a girl unless you were supposed to marry her. So God wants you to marry the girl I believed was who believed I was a Frenchman suffering from hemorrhoidal Tourette's."
"Don't be an asshole," said Hassan, almost threateningly. "I'm just surprised that Mr. High and Mighty Religious is fugging around with girls in the back of a pickup truck, that's all. You are probably drinking shitty beer and wearing a football jersey."
"What the fuck, dude? I kissed a girl, finally. A really hot, really sweet girl. Dingleberries, stop pushing it."
Colin didn't know why, but he felt compelled to keep pushing it.
"Whatever. I just can't believe you made out with Katrina. Is she just not as dumb and ditzy as she seemed that day?"
And then Hassan reached out and grabbed a handful of Colin's Jufro. He pulled Colin against the room by his hair and pushed him up against the wall. Hassan's jaw was clenched tight as he pressed into Colin's solar plexus, the precise location of the hole in Colin's gut.
"I said dingleberries, Kafir. You will respect the goddamn dingleberries. Now I'm going to bed before we get in a fight, and you want to know why I don't want to fight you? Because I'd lose."
Still joking, Colin thought. He's always joking, even when he's furious. And as Hassan made his way through the bathroom towards his room, and Colin sat back down to work on the theorem, Colin's face was bright and wet, the tears coming from frustration. Colin hated not being able to accomplish his markers. He'd hated it since he was 4 and his dad set learning the Latin conjugations for 25 irregular verbs as a daily marker. But by the end of the day, Colin only knew 23. His dad didn't chastise him, but Colin knew he'd failed. And now the markers were more complicated. Maybe, but they were still pretty simple. He wanted a best friend, a Catherine, and a theorem. And after almost 3 weeks in gutshot, it seemed he was becoming worse off than when he'd started. Hassan and Colin managed not to speak the next morning, not once, and it was clear to Colin that Hassan still felt just as pissed off as Colin did.
Colin watched in lock-jawed silence as Hassan furiously stabbed at his breakfast, and later as Hassan slammed the mini-recorder down on the coffee table of some factory retiree, who was old but not old enough for the nursing home. Colin could hear the annoyance in Hassan's voice as he asked, in the monotone of the aggressively bored, what life had been like in Gutshot when the oldster was a kid. By now, it seemed, they'd run through the best storytellers, and were left with people who took 5 minutes deciding whether they visited Asheville, North Carolina, in June or July of 1961. Colin still paid attention. It was, after all, what he did. But much of his brain power was elsewhere. Mostly he catalogued all the times Hassan had been an ass to him, and all the times he'd been the butt of Hassan's jokes, or the snide little comments Hassan had made about his Catherining. And now that Hassan was Catherining, he became the kind of guy who cruises, leaving Colin behind. Lindsay skipped that day to hang out with TOC at the store. So it was just Colin and Hassan and one single oldster who monopolized their entire day. Although the old man talked for 7 hours, almost without ceasing, Colin's world felt eerily quiet until he finally gave in as they left the old man's house to go and pick up Lindsay. "This sounds trite, but I think you've changed," Colin said as they walked down the oldster's driveway. "I'm tired of you hanging out with me only so you can make fun of me." Hassan said nothing in response, just climbed into the passenger seat and slammed the door shut. Colin got in and started the car, and then Hassan lost it. "Has it ever crossed your mind, you ungrateful asshole, that when I was mopping up after all your breakups, when I was picking your sorry ass off the floor of your bedroom, when I was listening to your endless rants and ravings about every fucking girl who ever gave you the time of day, that maybe I was actually doing it for you, and not because I'm oh so desperate to learn of the newest dumping in your life? What problems of mine have you listened to, dillhole? When have you ever sat with me for hours and listened to me whine about being a fat fugger whose best friend ditches him every time a Catherine comes along? Has it ever occurred to you that it might, for even the briefest of goddamn moments, that my life might be as bad as yours? Imagine if you weren't a fucking genius and you were lonely and nobody ever listened to you. So yeah, kill me. I kissed a girl, and I came home with that story, psyched to tell you, because I've got a story of my own, finally, after 4 years of listening to yours. And you're such a self-involved asshole that you can't, for one fucking second, realize that my life doesn't spin around the star of Colin Singleton." Hassan paused for breath, and Colin mentioned the thing that had bugging him most all day. "You called him Colin," said Colin. "Do you know what your problem is?" Hassan went on, not listening. "You can't live with the idea that someone might leave. Instead of being happy for me, like any other normal person, you're pissed off because, oh no, Hassan doesn't like me anymore. You're such a sitz, Pinkler. You're so goddamn scared of the idea that someone might dump you that your whole fucking life is built around not getting left behind. Well, it doesn't work, Kafir. It's not just dumb, it's ineffective. Because then, you're not being a good friend, or boyfriend, or whatever, because you're only thinking, they might not like me, they might not like me, and guess what? When you act like that, no one likes you. There's your goddamn theorem."
"You called him Colin," repeated Colin, his voice catching now.
"Called who Colin?"
"T.O.C.
"No,"
Colin nodded.
"Did I?"
Colin nodded.
"You're sure?" "Right. Of course you're sure. Huh. Well, I'm sorry. It was an asshole move on my part."
Colin turned into the store's parking lot and stopped the car, but made no move to get out.
"I know you're right. I mean, about me being a self-centered asshole.
Well, it's only sometimes, but still. Just stop."
"I don't really know how," he said.
"How do you just stop being terrified of getting left behind and ending up by yourself forever and not meaning anything to the world?"
"You're pretty fucking smart," Hassan answered. "I'm sure you can figure something out."
"It's great," said Colin after a while. "About Katrina, I mean. You fucking kissed a girl."
"A girl?
I mean, I always sort of thought you were gay," Colin acknowledged.
"I might be gay if I had a better looking best friend," said Hassan.
And I might be gay if I could locate your penis under the fat rolls. Bitch, I could gain 500 pounds and you could still see Thunderstick hanging to my knees. Colin smiled. She's a lucky girl. Too bad she'll never know just how lucky until we get married. And then Colin was back on the subject. You are sort of a dick to me sometimes. It would be easier if you acted like you didn't actually hate me. Dude, do you want me to sit here and say that you're my best friend and I love you and that you're such a genius that I want to cuddle up to you at night? Because I'm just not going to. That sits pinklery. But I do think you're a genius. No shit. Honestly, I do. I think that you can do whatever the fuck you want to do in your life, and that's a pretty sweet gig. Thanks, said Colin. And then they got out of the car, and they met in front of the hood, and Colin held out his arms a little. And Hassan shoved him playfully, and then they hustled into the store. TOC was restocking some beef jerky sticks while Lindsay sat on the stool behind the counter, reading a celebrity magazine, her bare feet up on the counter beside the cash register. Hey, TOC said. Heard you got a date tonight, big guy. Yeah, and it's all thanks to your excellent driving. If you missed that pothole, she never would have ended up in my arms. Well, you're welcome. She's a hottie, ain't she? Hey, said Lindsay without looking up from her magazine. I'm the hottie. Oh, baby, hush, TOC said. So, Colin, said TOC, Hass says you aren't much for cruising, but you gotta come hunting with us next weekend. That's nice of you to offer, Colin said. And it was sort of nice. No quarterback or cornerback or anyone else in any way associated with football had ever invited him to do anything. But Colin thought immediately of the reason he chose Catherine 19 over Marie Caravalli. In this world, Colin figured, you're best off staying with your kind. I don't know how to shoot, though. Oh, I bet you'll bag a hogzilla, Tio said TOC. Colin glanced over at Hassan, who opened his eyes wide and nodded subtly. For a split second, Colin thought of passing on the hog hunt, but he figured he owed it to Hassan. Part of not being a self-centered asshole, Colin reasoned, is doing things with your friends even when you don't want to. Even if they result in the death of a wild hog. Okay, Colin said, looking not at TOC but at Hass. And TOC said, sounds good. Listen, since y'all is here to look after the store till closing, I'm going to head off. I got to meet the boys down at the factory. We're going bowling. Now Lindsay put down the magazine. I like bowling, she said. Boys' night out, baby. Lindsay fake pouted, then smiled and stood up to kiss TOC goodbye. He leaned across the counter, pecked her on the mouth, and strode out. They closed up the store early and went home, even though Hollis didn't like to be interrupted before 5:30. She was lying on the couch in the living room, saying, "We need your help here, if you look at the price point." And then she saw them walking in, and said, "I need to call you back." She hung up on the phone. Now I've told you all, I work until 5:30, and I can't be interrupted. Hollis, why are you selling land to that guy Marcus? That's none of your business, and I'll thank you to try not to change the subject. You'll stay out of the house until 5:30. I'm paying you to work, remember. And Lindsay Lee Wells, I know you weren't down Mr. Jeffrey's house today. Don't think I don't find these things out. I've got a date tonight. So I'll be skipping dinner, Hassan interjected. And I'm taking Colin to dinner, Lindsay said. This Colin, she clarified, her extended pointer finger poking his bicep. Hollis beamed. Colin looked over at Lindsay with equal parts surprise and frustration and confusion. Well, I guess I can do some work this evening with you all out then, Hollis said. Colin spent his remaining pre-date hours working on the theorem. Within 30 minutes he'd nailed K-19. The problem, as it turned out, was not so much bad math as it was false hope. Colin had been trying to tweak the theorem to make K-19's graph look better. In short, he'd been counting upon a reunion. He'd been assuming that the theorem could see into the future when K-19 would return to him. But the theorem, he decided, couldn't take into account its own influence. So then, with the same formula he'd worked out the night before in the car with Lindsay, Colin managed to get it to reflect his relationship with Catherine 19 up until now. By 5 o'clock he was perilously close. He had captured the Catherine roller coaster 18 times, but what he hadn't done was quite important. He hadn't gotten Catherine 3 on paper, and one cannot take an equation that predicts 18 out of 19 Catherines to the Nobel Prize Committee. For the next 2 hours he thought of every facet of Catherine 3 given name Catherine Mutzenberger, with a precision and clarity that made his brain so unusual. And yet he could not fix what he came to call the three anomaly. The equation that correctly predicted the other 18 came out looking like an upside-down bell curve. The graph's smiley-facedness indicated that Colin had not been dumped by three, but had dumped her, which was ludicrous. He could remember everything about Catherine Three, and the rest of them too, of course. He remembered everything about everything, and yet something about Catherine Three clearly eluded him. As he worked on the theorem, Colin was so focused that the world outside his notebook seemed not to exist. So he jolted up in surprise when he heard from behind him Lindsay say, "Time for dinner, dude." He opened the door. He turned around to see her head peeking through the open door. She wore a blue cotton tank top with tight blue jeans, Converse All-Stars, and, as if she knew what he liked, no makeup. She looked, well, pretty, even not smiling. Colin glanced down at his jeans and yellow Cranial Kids t-shirt. "Don't dress up on account of me," Lindsay said, smiling. "We gotta get going anyway." They came downstairs just in time to look through the screen door and see Hassan getting into Katrina's SUV. Hassan handed her a sagging pink rose he'd plucked from the mansion's gardens. He smiled, and then they kissed. Lord! Colin had seen it with his own eyes. Hassan kissing a girl who had to have been homecoming queen. Was Katrina homecoming queen? "No, I was," responded Lindsay immediately.
"Really?"
Lindsay pursed her lips. "Well, no, but you don't have to sound surprised about it. Katrina was on the court, though." She stopped and shouted towards the kitchen. "Hey, Hollis, we're leaving. We might be back late. Hot sex and all." "Have fun," replied Hollis. "Call if you'll be out past 12. They drove downtown to the gas station / Taco Hell, where they ordered at the drive-thru. They both peered through the accordion window, Lindsay leaning over Colin to catch a glimpse of Hassan and Katrina eating. "She seems to really like him," Lindsay said. "I mean, I really like him too. I don't want to sound mean. I'm just surprised. She usually goes for, the dumb hot ones."
"So she's like you?"
"Watch it. I'm paying for dinner, after all." They took their chicken soft tacos and drove off, and finally Colin decided to ask what was going on.
Why are we going out for dinner together?"
"Well, three reasons. First, because I've been thinking about our theorem and I have a question.
How does it work if you're gay?"
"Huh?"
"Well, it's all graph going up means boy dumps girl, and graph going down means girl dumps boy, right?"
"But what if they're both boys?"
"It doesn't matter. You just assign a position to each person. Instead of being B and G, it could just as easily be B1 and B2. That's how algebra works."
"Which would explain my C minus.
Okay. Thank God. I was really worried that it would only help the straights, and that's not much of a theorem.
Reason two is I'm trying to get Hollis to like me, and she likes you, so if I like you, she'll like me."
Colin was looking at her, confused.
"C minus in algebra, A plus in coolology.
See, popularity is complicated. You have to spend a lot of time thinking about liking. You have to really like being liked, and also like being disliked."
Colin listened intently, nibbling the inside of his thumb. Listening to Lindsay talk about popularity made him feel a bit of the mysterium tremendum. "Anyway," she went on, "I need to find out what's going on with her selling land. That guy Marcus built this cookie-cutter house subdivision south of Bradford. I mean, it's vomitous. Hollis would never stand for that shit."
"Oh, okay," Colin said, feeling a bit like a pawn.
"And reason three," Lindsay said, "is I gotta teach you how to shoot, so you don't embarrass yourself."
"Shoot a gun?"
"A shotgun. I put one in your trunk this afternoon." Colin nervously glanced towards the back.
"It won't bite," Lindsay said.
"Where did you get a gun?"
"Where did I get it?"
"Smarty pants, getting a gun in Gutshot, Tennessee is easier than getting chlamydia from a hooker." 20 minutes later, they were sitting in a grassy field on the edge of a thick forested area that Lindsay said belonged to Hollis, but would soon belong to Marcus. The field, overgrown with wild flowers and the occasional tree sapling, was nonetheless fenced in by an interweaving series of chopped logs.
"Why is there a fence?"
"Used to be we had a horse named Hobbit that grazed here, but then he died."
"He was your horse?"
"Yep. Well, Hollis's too. Hollis got him from my father as a wedding present, and then when I was born, 6 months later, Hollis gave him to me. He was the gentlest horse, Hobbit.
I could ride him from the time I was 3.
So are your parents divorced?
No, not officially. But you know what they say about Gutshot. The population never goes up and never goes down, because every time a woman gets pregnant, a man leaves town.
Colin laughed. He left when I was 1. He calls a couple of times a year, but Hollis never makes me talk to him. I don't know the guy, and I don't really care to. How about you?
My parents are still married. I have to call them at the same time every night, in 30 minutes, actually. They're overprotective, I guess, but normal. We're really boring.
You're not boring.
You've got to stop saying that, or people will start believing you.
Now, about the gun.
Lindsay jumped up, ran back across the field, and hurdled the fence. Colin followed at a more sustainable pace. He did not, as a rule, believe in running.
"Pop the trunk," Lindsay shouted.
Colin unlocked the trunk and found a long, double-barreled shotgun with a stained wooden handle. Lindsay picked up the gun, handed it to Colin, and said, "Point it at the sky." She grabbed a square paper box and they marched back, over the fence and across the field. Looking like an expert, Lindsay cracked open the gun, pulled 2 cylindrical shells from the paper box and inserted them. "When this shit is loaded, you don't point it at me. Hear?" She snapped the gun shut, held it up to her shoulder, and then carefully handed it over to Colin. She moved behind him, helped him hold the gun against his shoulder. He could feel her breasts against his shoulder blades, her feet by his feet, her stomach against his back.
"Tuck it tight against your shoulder," she said, and he did.
"The safety's here," she said, reaching up and guiding his hand to a steel switch on the side of the gun. He'd never held a gun before. It felt simultaneously exciting and deeply wrong.
"Now when you shoot it," she said, her breath against the nape of his neck, "you don't just pull the trigger. You reach in there and you squeeze it. Just squeeze it softly. I'm going to take a step back, and then you just squeeze, okay?
What should I aim at?"
"You couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, so just aim straight ahead."
Colin felt the absence of Lindsay on his back, and then he, ever so softly, squeezed the trigger. The blast hit his ears at the same moment it hit his right shoulder, and the force of the gun caused his arm to pull up and his legs to fall out from under him, and he found himself sitting on his ass in a field of wild flowers, with the gun pointing at the tree, at the sky.
"Well," he said, "that was fun."
Lindsay was laughing. "See, that's why we're here. So you don't fall on your ass in front of Colin and Chase and everybody. You've got to learn to prepare for that kick." And so, over the course of the next hour, Colin shot the holy living hell out of the oak trees before him, pausing only to reload the gun and call his parents. He shot 44 shells into the forest, and then, when his right arm was numb and he felt like he'd been punched repeatedly in the shoulder by a champion boxer, he said, "Why don't you try?" Lindsay shook her head and sat down on the grass. Colin followed her down.
"Oh, I don't shoot guns. I'm terrified of them," she said.
"Are you shitting me?"
"No, plus that's a 10-gauge. I wouldn't shoot a 10-gauge for $1,000. They kick like a goddamn mule."
"Then why did..."
"Like I said, I don't want you to look like a pussy."
Colin wanted to continue the conversation, but didn't quite know how. So he lay back, rubbed his sore shoulder. On the whole, Gutshot had been physically unkind to him. A puffy scar above his eye, 44 distinct shoulder bruises, and of course a still painful, gaping hole in his gut. And yet somehow, he still liked it, the place. He noticed that she was lying next to him, her arms crossed beneath her head. She kicked at his shin playfully to get his attention.
"What?" he asked.
"I was thinking about this girl you love so much," she said, "and this place I love so much, and how that happens. How you can just fall into it. This land Hollis is selling. The thing about it is, well, I'm partly mad because I don't want there to be some bullshit McMansion subdivision up there, but also partly because my secret hideout is up there."
"Your what?"
"My secret hideout. My super, incredibly top-secret location that no one on Earth knows about." Lindsay paused, turned her head away from the starstruck sky and toward Colin.
"Do you want to see it?"
"The end of the middle."
"I don't want to flatter myself," said Catherine One in between sips of coffee at Café Celle Marie, "but it does feel a little special, that it all began with me."
"Well," said Colin, who was drinking milk with a shot of coffee in it, "there's 3 ways to look at it. Either one, it's a massive coincidence that the girls I ever like happen to share the same 9 letters. 2,
I just happen to think it's a particularly beautiful name. Or three, I never got over our 2.5-minute relationship.
You were very cute, you know, she said. She blew on the coffee through pursed lips. I remember thinking that. You were Dork Chic before Dork Chic was chic.
I'm leaning towards explanation three at the moment. He smiled. Dishes clattered around him. The place was crowded. He could see into the long kitchen where their waiter was smoking a long, thin cigarette. I think maybe you tried to be odd on purpose. I think you like that. It makes you you and not someone else.
You sound like your father, he said, referencing Crazy Keith.
I found you insanely attractive ever since I saw you when I was freaking out about my French test, she answered. She didn't blink but let go of his stare. Those eyes as blue as the sky ought to be. And then she smiled. Do I sound like my father now?
Yeah, weirdly enough.
He also sucks at French. She laughed. Colin saw the waiter put out his cigarette and then come over to their table and asked if they wanted anything more. Catherine the First said no, and then she turned to Colin and said, Do you know anything about Pythagoras? And Colin said, I know his theorem. She said, No, I mean the guy. He was weird. He thought everything could be expressed numerically. That math could explain the world. I mean, like, everything.
What, like, even love?
Colin asked, only vaguely annoyed that she knew something he didn't.
Particularly love.
And you've taught me enough French for me to say 10-5 space, 16-5, 14-19-5 space, 17-21-5 space, 10-5 space, 21-9-13-5. For a moment, Colin stared at her, wordlessly. He cracked the code pretty quickly, but he stayed silent trying to figure out when she'd come up with it, when she'd memorized it. Even he couldn't have translated French letters into Arabic numerals that quickly.
Je pense que je t'aime, she said numerically.
I think that I like you. Or, I think that I love you. The French verb aime has two meanings. And that's why he liked her and loved her. She spoke to him in a language that, no matter how hard you studied it, could not be completely understood. He stayed quiet until he had fully formulated the response, one that would keep her interest alive without satiating it. Colin Singleton, let it be said, he couldn't play the ninth inning of a relationship to save his life, but he could damn well score in the first.
You're just saying that because I'm on a TV show that no one watches, he said.
Maybe. Or maybe, he said. You're saying it because you're flattered I've spent 8 years of my life chasing after the 9 letters in your name.
Maybe, she allowed.
And then Colin's phone rang. His mum. Their sneak out was over, but by then it was too late. In his mind, Catherine the First was already becoming Catherine 19. She would soon retake the throne that, all along, had been rightfully hers.